Yeah, this is a real spontaneous live stream. It's noon on some damn day, 8th of September. Oh, how many days till my birthday? How many days until I turn 57 years old? How many days till my birthday? There's your question. And if you don't know, you can't call yourself a Steph fan. All right. So, we're going to do a little ranty rant here. 23 minus 8. Oh, so close. So close. It's not that. I can't believe you're missing. The joke in my family is I don't have a birthday. I have a birthday month wherein everyone has to obey me. It really doesn't go very far, but, you know, the sentiment is nice. All right. Do you want an intro? Or do you want, it's the 24th, September 24th, 6 p.m. I was born on a Saturday night, full of grace, bile, and truth. Grace, bile, and truth. That's the name of my punk band. All right. Should we go straight to rant, or do you want an intro, a little foreplay, or should we just raw dog it straight from the front, or from the back, or from the side, or whatever? So intro, foreplay. You want some intro? All right, we can answer some questions before going into the rant. Preamble, haradaladaladal. All right, so here we go. Red flag, somebody red flag to quickly tell when your counterparty is not willing or able to actually engage in a substantive argument. They will contend with you until the cows come home, but there will be no actual argument, just emotional crap from counterparts. So the first time that they deny a fact, I'm done. And the other one, of course, is per capita. If they deny per capita, I mean, the real IQ test is, do they bring up an exception to a general rule and think that they're contributing anything other than wool to your sandwich, so to speak? Like, Asians are generally shorter. I know it all. Like, then that's just like they can't process concretes. They can't process abstractions. It may not be an IQ thing. They might just be really good at concretes, but not abstractions. But yeah, that would be my particular warning. So, let's see here. Here's a study. People increasingly view those with opposing political beliefs as less moral than those with shared political beliefs. Across two experiments, using a U.S. undergraduate sample of 1,000 people and U.S. resident online sample, ultimatum game to investigate whether acts of fairness or even kindness by persons without party political beliefs would mitigate moral derogation towards them. Right? If you're nice, do people judge you better if you're opposing them politically or morally? Neither acts of fairness nor kindness impacted the differential moral derogation, means negative views or insults, between out-party and in-party members. Participants in both experiments morally derogated individuals with opposing political beliefs irrespective of their actions. That's why I don't apologize for a minute. Moreover, extreme partisans engaged in even greater moral derogation of out-party individuals. However, even self-identified moderate partisans morally derogated out partisans. When our political opponents are judged to be immoral by virtue of their political identity rather than their actual behavior, obstacles to political cooperation and political compromise may be difficult to overcome. Well, no shit, Sherlock. But the idea that political identities are different from actual behaviors, right, that's you're advocating for legal enforcement of your beliefs, right? So the idea that this wouldn't have something to do with that is really something. All right, so, and there was another study. How acceptable is it to shout down a speaker to prevent them from speaking on campus? The most tolerant and open-minded and free speech group were Christians. Does anybody know, if you didn't see this already, does anybody know what was the most intolerant, aggressive, and violent group against free speech? That's right. Atheists. Yeah, atheists are the least tolerant and most aggressive. So only 25% of Christians thought it was acceptable to shout down a speaker to prevent them from speaking on campus, but 44% of atheists believed that, that it was always or sometimes. Right? So almost twice. Almost twice. Isn't that wild? There was another study that I found really, really fascinating, which we'll get to in a second. Satanist wasn't on that list. Did you see my tip and quick question? Is this the person who sent me $4? Is this the person who sent me $4? I saw a video from 2022. You had a hardcover copy of Almost. Is it possible to get hard copies of any of your novels these days? No, not really. There's sort of various technical and taxi reasons for that kind of stuff. But now we're working on it. We're working on it. So now there's no hard copies. At the moment, you can get a hard copy of my regular books, though, through Amazon. So let me see. I've got to scroll down a little bit. Ah, yes. Here we go. Here we go. In this experiment, people were asked to sit quietly for 15 minutes in a room with nothing but their own thoughts. They also had the option to hit a button and give themselves an electric shock. Getting physically shocked is unpleasant, but many people preferred it to the emotional discomfort of boredom. Out of 42 participants, nearly half opted to press the button at least once, even though they had experienced the shock earlier in the study and reported they would pay money to avoid experiencing it again. One male outlier opted to shock himself 190 times. 67% of men voluntarily chose to experience shocks during the thinking period, compared to 25% of women. Oh, boy, oh, boy. So you think philosophy is a challenge? People would rather electrocute themselves than sit with their own thoughts. But don't worry. I'm sure that philosophy is just about to round the corner and win. 15 minutes with your own thoughts. No, I would prefer electrocuting myself to being alone with my own thoughts. And this is particularly true for men. Women more comfortable with their own thoughts, or maybe not as disturbed by their own thoughts, or maybe they don't find their own thoughts particularly intrusive or present. No, that's unfair. But yes, I thought that was quite interesting, quite challenging. So yes, not was napping an option in the study? You could do whatever you want. You just, there was nothing to do, and just people are like, hey, cool, I'll electrocute myself rather than be alone with myself. Crazy man. In a free and stateless society, would businesses be able to merge and grow into massive corporate behemoths we have today? How would the free market prevent a BlackRock from happening? Right. You see, a free market is free. Right. So if people like a company, they can buy from it. If they don't like a company, they won't buy from it. You see, you're so used to the government enforcing its will upon you that you don't understand what an organic society looks like. And I get that. I mean, I have a tough time picturing it myself. But you're used to the accumulation of power through centralized coercive oligarchies to the point where you just, well, power's just going to accumulate like planets gather together from rings of dust through gravity. Planets are just like, it's like, no, it doesn't just happen. Like, okay, think of all the companies you didn't buy from today, right? You bought from 10 companies. Maybe you count if you're a landlord or whatever. Just, you know, think of, there are literally millions and millions and millions of companies you didn't buy from. So to combat political power, people have to go crazy these days, right? To combat increasing or growing political power means risking being ostracized, deplatformed, debanked, arrested. Like, so you don't understand how powerful it is to do nothing in a free society. Like, you actually have to go out and voluntarily give people money. So if the if some company is doing what people don't like, they'll just stop buying from it. How is a company going to force you to buy from them in a free society? I mean, it's a genuine question. How on earth is a company going to force you to buy from them? Quoting Rush lyrics, that's some deep philosophy. So yeah, how are they going to force you? Does Bud Light, was it Anheuser-Busch? Does, do they have an army to force people to buy? Can they tax people? No. If people don't want to buy Bud Light, they don't buy Bud Light. They can't, right? Trapping you with free samples of delicious products like drug dealers. No, they can't. I mean, look, okay, let me ask you this, right? You've been in the grocery store, and for me, if I'm a little peckish, what do? I look around for people giving out free samples, right? because you don't buy groceries when you're hungry because you just made bad choices. At least I do. So you go out, and how many times after you try those three samples do you buy the product, right? So the truth, your truth about the Wild West really helped me envision what a free society could look like. Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Retirement accounts. Why do you need a retirement account? Like, why do retirement accounts exist? Why do you need a retirement account? Why do you need a retirement account? Why do you have a retirement account? Why is there so much saved up in retirement accounts that the managers of those retirement accounts can affect large corporations? To grow money, you might not be able to work forever. Well, no, you won't be able to work forever, for sure. No kids to take care of you when you're old. Well, no, you have a retirement account because your money is taxed if you don't, right? I mean, there's 401ks in America, there's RRSPs in Canada, lots of places have, that if you put your money into a retirement account, that money is not taxed. It's taxed when you take it out, when your income will be much lower. So your money is held hostage, right? Yeah, your money is held hostage. So you are accumulating. And why do you need a retirement account? Because Social Security retirement plans probably won't be there, right? I mean, the unfunded liabilities are north of $170, $180 trillion, like more than 10 times, about 10 times the economy. So that's not going to be there. And you have to plan for your retirement because you have to plan for your money to be worth 90% less by the time you retire, right? So, I mean, it's all defensive measures against dilution and coercion, which are two sides of the same coin. What's wrong with printed money? Oh, there's nothing wrong with it. Just, you know, you can go to a store and try and buy stuff with Monopoly money and see what happens, right? All right. Your wife has stopped taking care of yourself? Yes. So let me just see here. I sent an email a few days ago about a call-in entitled, "Wife Has Stopped Taking Care of Herself, Betrayal, Trauma, Stillbirth, Divorce. My wife and I were hoping to talk to you. Did that email get lost?" Let me see here. Usually things aren't going into spam. Let's see here. Did the email start, "My wife is slowly giving up, taking care of herself and trying to be beautiful for me"? Is that the one? Just hit me with a Y if that's the case. That's the one. And do you have kids? I just want to check. Do you have kids? No kids yet. But and she had a stillbirth? I don't remember that. I apologize for that. I'm sorry. I'm just looking at this. My apologies. Geez, it would be nice if it actually showed me where something was. Yeah, I'm sorry about that. That's very, very tough. That's very tough. What happened in your life earlier that you starting to try and have kids when you're pushing 40? Or did you try before? So you've been married for nearly 5 years. So you were married when you were 33. I assume you dated for a while before that. Whoa. There was my camera go. Yeah, so I guess my basic curiosity is, why did you wait from 33 to 38, if that was the case, to start having kids? I'm just waiting for that answer. Oh, you were trying for a while? Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. How long were you trying for? You had some fertility issues? Yeah, I mean, it can happen in your 30s for sure. Oh, you've been trying for 3 years? Right, right. Okay, yeah, just give me a shout. We'll talk about it. Just email me your Skype ID. What's your opinion on men's increased suicide rate in the West? Why are men falling behind women? And can this be fixed? You lost twins last year. Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I just, I've been having a number of couples conversations about infertility these days. And of course, it is a rising issue. I'm very sorry for that. That's very, very tough. So, men's increased suicide rate in the West. Well, do you think that men or women are better at seeing over the horizon towards coming trends? Do you think that men or women are better, and it could be slightly, better at seeing over the horizon to coming trends? Yeah. I mean, this is part of my novel, The Future, which is... the present, my novel, The Present, which is, there's a man, particularly the Christian men. Yeah, men are more adapted for looking out on long-term broad issues, right? Of course, yeah. I mean, women do it in terms of child safety and men do it in terms of resources. So what percentage is our current trajectory as a society? What percentage is it sustainable? Like 100%, it's perfectly sustainable. 0%, not at all sustainable. What percentage sustainable is our current social trajectory? Very low, maybe 10%. 0%, 1% past 100 years. Women have issues of neurosis if you bring up too many serious future projections and need security, safety, or something. Yeah, mathematically, it can't continue, right? No. I mean, look, mathematically, whatever, you know, I hope obviously what displaces the current predatory system is something peaceful and reasonable and voluntary and all kinds of good stuff. But yeah, the current system is not sustainable in most places in the West. In some places, maybe a little bit for another generation or two. But, you know, current trends continue. It's not sustainable in its current form, for sure, right? I mean, that's math, right? Now, how long, blah, 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 right? So we'll sort of see about that, but it will be a surprise, right? It's gonna come as a surprise to vast numbers of people when bills can't be paid, right? And, you know, this happens, right? So I think men, so what do men do when they perceive themselves to be on an unsustainable path? What do men do, right? So let's say that you're a man, you're gathering together your resources for the winter, and you have a pretty strong sense that you don't have enough resources for your family to make it through the winter. What do you do? Hedge by chickens, survivor mode. Yeah, you find solutions with your usual setup, right? Yeah, you will try and find some way to solve the problem, right? That's what we as men do, right? Now, men, why do men get depressed? When men clearly see coming dangers and they're prevented from acting to mitigate them, right? So when men, like, why do we see coming dangers? So we can act. But if we're prevented from acting on dangers, then we become depressed. And it's a way of, it sort of feminizes men, right? I think it's one of the reasons why sperm count's dropping and so on, right? So, I mean, you know, everybody knows that the currency is, like, the money printing and all of that is nuts. And what incredible insight, Steph. Wow, I'm glad this is helpful. So, I mean, let's take that example, right? Everybody knows that the monetary policy is crazy, right? And what can we do about it? What can we do about it? I mean... monetary policy, not necessarily ourselves, right? Like, there's a predator called inflation and money printing and debt and unfunded liabilities. There's a predator loose in society. Now, as men, what do we want to do when there's a wolf in the camp? What do? We drive the wolf out, right? We deal with the wolf. That's what we do. We leap into action, we deal with the wolf, and then it's exciting. I remember when I was a teenager, I called a friend of mine's place and a strange voice answered gruffly, and then that person hung up, whoever it was. I didn't recognize the person, and he was a single mom household, so there shouldn't have been a man there. And then I called back and nobody answered. So my friends and I were like, not obviously super certain, but our spider sense was tingling, and we were concerned that there was an intruder in his house, right? Because there shouldn't be a man there. And then if you call, somebody gruffly answers and then hangs up and then doesn't answer when you call back right away. We were concerned that there was an intruder at his house. And so we literally jumped on our bikes and legs burning, cranking. We raced over as quickly as possible at the ripe old age of, 14 or so, to deal with this intruder, because that's what men do. We leap into action. I remember as a kid playing soccer and saying, it was kind of cringy looking back at it, muttering to myself, forward for St. George, it's a battle and I'm practicing and all that kind of stuff, right? I was very much into war games when I was a kid, and I write about this in my novel Almost. So, what can we do? What can we do? As men, women, right? Now, because when society is facing unsustainability, men's genetics are very different from women's genetics in terms of what happens when there's social chaos and centralized authority. What happens to men, right? What happens to men if there's general danger and centralized authority? We get drafted and we die. That's sort of the way when the tribal leaders are threatened, we get drafted and we die. And if we resist the draft, we still die, because a lot of women are conditioned were conditioned in history to not mate with men they perceived to be cowards. And courage was defined as serving the rulers and dying, right? So we've talked about this before, that one of the things that got probably millions of men killed was a white feather, right? So if there was a young man of military age wandering around London, say, in 1915 during the First World War, a woman would hand him a white feather, which was a symbol of cowardice, and women would not mate with a man who had not gone to war. There was even a song, I Love a Man in Uniform, and women's attraction to military men, of course, is well known and all that, right? So if you go to war, let's say that there's a 75% chance that you won't breed if you don't go to war, but if you go to war, there's only a 50% chance you'll die. Then your genetics are 25% better off going to war than staying home, right? We follow this, right? That makes sense. And based upon women's refusal to mate with who the leaders refer to as a coward, right? And you can see this happening at the moment. So there are lots of men on strike, right? Lots of men on strike at the moment. Lots of men on strike. Who's on strike? To one degree or another. Could be soft quitting, just not putting much in at work. It could be working the bare minimum. It could be deferring starting your life. Who's on strike? Deferred life until last year, yeah. Because a man who doesn't serve the rulers is castigated often by the women. I was up until 3 years ago. Now looking to start my own company. Good for you. After all the young, healthy men of military age are dead, you get the tragedy in Ukraine. As of October 1st, after drafting the mentally ill, physically ill, old and young, they will now draft women. Right. Now, in general, what happens to women when the foreign tribe takes over? We all know this, right? What what happens to women when the foreign tribe takes over. Oh, well, they get usually get raped, right? Ugly and vicious and evil that that is. Their genes fare better than the men. The men get killed, the women get raped. And both are murderous and horrible and terrible. But as far as genetics go, right, the women do better. After my divorce, I'm on soft strike. The more you have, the bigger the target on your back. So, I'm not sure if this is considered being on strike, but a lot of my male friends want to leave it behind and start a new life alone in the woods, some sort of escapism and not dealing with reality. Now, see, you're shaming and attacking men who are on strike. Right? Escapism and not dealing with reality. How do you know? Start a new life alone in the woods. Well, they may not want a new life totally alone. I mean, if there's a woman who's going to join them in the woods, I'm sure that they would listen to that possibility, right? See, the moment that men don't want to work, what does society do? They're losers, they're quitters, they're incels, they're ragers, they're pathetic, they're not real men, they're like, you just shame men. It's the cattle prod of testicular attack. So, yeah, it's not at all ideal. Hi, Steph, I'm a dentist in private practice. And my teeth. Honestly, it has been tough to keep my head above water. It seems to me that a lot of other dentists use sales and pressure tactics to generate production and are very aggressive with treatment. Perhaps that makes them more profitable. I want to do the right thing for my patients, but it's difficult. Any suggestions? Yeah, that's interesting. There was an old practice in China, obviously pre-communism, where you paid your doctor every month until you got sick, and then your doctor had to treat you for free. So your doctor, of course, had a great incentive to keep you healthy. Now, I mean, I don't know what the laws are, the regulations. Sensible ideas are often blocked by regulations. But what I would say is that in an ideal society, you would be better paid if your patients had fewer dental issues, right? You'd be better paid if your patients had fewer dental issues. In other words, you would be paid by the insurance company good money as long as your patient stayed healthy, right? So I don't know what you can work out or what you can offer or anything like that, but that would be, yeah, because, I mean, socialized medicine as a whole or government-regulated medicine as a whole, it all comes about because generally people haven't taken care of their health, right? 70 to 90% of health issues are the direct result of choices that people make, right? Overeating, not exercising, and so on. So 70 to 90%, I've sort of heard it both ways, and stuff in between, 70 to 90%. So people don't take care of their health, they panic, they run to the government because they can't afford their medical bills. And so the government steps in and says, I will pay for these people who didn't take care of their health and didn't save enough money to pay for their medical bills and didn't have insurance or whatever, or their insurance lapsed because it got too expensive because they weren't taking care of their health. So I will rush in and save these people who haven't taken care of their health. And then all you do is subsidize people not taking care of their health. You just pay people. You literally are paying people to let themselves get sick. So, yeah, it's very bad. I pay my dentist $600 a year on autopilot for 2 cleanings per year and 1 x-ray. Yeah. So if you can find a way to monetize your patient's health, that would be very, very interesting, right? If I were a dentist, I would say, hey, you come in for your 2 cleanings and you come in for x-rays, then I will, if you floss, right, and you floss, you sign a pledge or whatever, then if I have to pull a tooth, it's free. You could offer, like, if you follow, right, if you do the right thing, then any emergencies are free. Now, I mean, I had an ankylosed tooth, a tooth that was kind of welded to the bone, and that was a big mess, and that was just, it should have been dealt with when I was a kid, but I was in the British system, which is dental care is socialized, so obviously I wasn't taken care of. So I had to deal with that as an adult, which was a, this is why this side of my mouth droops a little, because I had to drill up here and it cut some of the nerves. So all right. Sorry. Let me just get to your comments. Any value in what I'm saying? If you could tip, I would be massively and deeply and hugely appreciative if this sort of helps out. Here's a quick question, just while you're thinking of tipping this show. Am I Steph on strike? No, not on strike. No. You think not? In a sense, could make more, I don't know what that means, taxable income. If my eyes do not deceive me, then no. Thank you for streaming. I appreciate that. Thank you, Sam, for the tip. I appreciate that. I missed the previous discussion, so I could be missing something. Yeah. Everyone comes in late and asks me to revisit. So, being on strike doesn't mean not working. Being on strike doesn't mean not working. Let me ask you this. Let's be honest. Man to man to woman. Let's be honest. Have you ever been annoyed at your partner, gone out with them anyway, but not been very positive? Right? Have you ever been annoyed at your partner, gone out with them anyway, but just not been very positive? You're there, but you're just not going to be your usual charming self. You ever done that sort of, you're there? Yeah, of course you have, right? Fine, we have this social engagement we have to go to. We're not getting along. I'll go. I'll be pretty quiet in the car. Maybe I'll play some angry music, right? More than I'd like to admit. Yeah, there's passive aggression, right? Thank you. I watch locals, but I appreciate that. Did that for years? Yeah. So your wife's parents are coming over. You're having a fight with your wife. You put it all aside, but you're kind of there, but you're not there, right? So you're there, but you're not bringing all of yourself there, right? Have you ever had this where you have a coworker who you help and they continue to screw things up, so you just stop helping them? Of course, right? So you're kind of on strike with regards to that. It's wherever you withdraw resources that otherwise you would normally provide, right? Oh my God, yes, but still tried. They still tried? Right. If you're a woman, if you're a fine lady here, have you ever withheld sex, even when you wanted to have sex, in order to punish the man in your life? Withhold sex from him, even when you like want to have sex. Have you withheld sex because you're upset and want to teach him a lesson? No, never. Oh, that's impressive. I did that to my girlfriend and she got pretty mad. Yeah. Guilty. It happens. It happens. A little tougher for men to do, but men do it. What men do, so women will withhold sex. What do men withhold in a relationship to punish the woman, right? It used to be money, right? But what do men withhold in a relationship to punish the woman? Yeah, attention, emotional availability, emotions, attention, empathy, sympathy, and warmth. Women withhold sex and men withhold warmth, right? And then you get into this vicious cycle where because the man is cold, the woman doesn't want to have sex with him. And because the woman doesn't want to have sex with him, the man gets colder. And this is the beginning of the water spout that leads to the breakup, right? The divorce, the end, right? Somebody's got to break that cycle, right? Because you're training each other like you would train a puppy, like you would train a dog, right? They're trying to anyway. And you're treating somebody as a means to an end rather than as an end in themselves, right? A vicious circle, yeah. That was my relationship for years, but we fixed it with your help. Beautiful. Thank you very much. Now, I will tell you, I am absolutely on strike. I am absolutely on strike. And I even announced that I was going on strike. Does anybody remember? If you've been around for a couple of years, you probably remember this. Am I on strike? Let's see your free domain memory. Oh, lots of typing. Me too, in various ways. Yeah, I'm on strike. So I guess it was, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago, something like that. I said, I'm off politics. I don't do politics anymore. When was the last time you saw me do a current political event? I'm off politics. I've been off politics for years and years now. I don't do politics. So I'm on strike. Am I on strike on Twitter? Am I refusing to participate in Twitter? Yeah. I mean, they gave me my account back, hundreds of thousands of followers, and I'm not... So I'm on strike on Twitter, right? I'm leaving years of labor and a built-up audience and not going to it, right? Like, they literally are giving me a lottery ticket and I'm not cashing it in, right? Because if I went on Twitter, I would make a lot of money and get a lot of influence and so on. And I could still stay off politics with lots of people who are doing it, right? So, yeah, I'm on strike. You still follow me on Twitter? It's funny. That's funny. So, yeah, I'm on strike for all that kind of stuff. Twitter isn't much different. Elon hasn't really followed through with promises. You cut the guy some slack. I mean, really, cut the guy some slack. He is facing an uphill battle and a blowback, the likes of which you and I probably can't even imagine because we don't know more than 10% of it. You know, it's really easy to put yourself in somebody else's position and say, it'd be easy for me. Oh, I could do it so much better. I'd just so much easier. Right? That's dangerous thinking. It's vainglorious. And, you know, he is one of the smartest people on the planet. He started like a half a dozen crazy successful companies. And he came from a situation of extreme child abuse, and he has retained his positivity and enthusiasm. He's fought some pretty hard battles, some of which I agree with, some of which I don't. He seems to have helped avert escalation recently with his Starlink thing. I mean, there's... Please, I'm begging you, don't say this guy who's arguably the greatest entrepreneur in history. And not just the greatest entrepreneur in history, but he is also heavily dedicated to making the world a better place. He's like the philanthropist capitalist, so to speak, right? I mean, he didn't have to buy Twitter, and he knew the blowback he was going to get, but he did, and he has certainly improved free speech on Twitter. Let's at least give him that. He's massively improved free speech on Twitter. Let's give him that. So if you say, well, I'd do way better than one of the smartest people on the planet, I mean, my gosh, that's Dunning-Kruger right there. I'm sorry to be blunt, right? And it doesn't mean that he couldn't do better. I mean, but I, without knowing all the factors that are at play, and a lot of people who get a lot of pressure don't say anything about it, right? So, you know, I mean, can you imagine me saying, oh, I'd be a much better businessman than Elon Musk? It's like, that's crazy. That's crazy. I wouldn't even, do I have 44 billion lying around to buy a company? I do not, right? So how does he manage time? It's unreal. Well, he sleeps at the office. He works like crazy. He's not the best dad on the planet. And one of his kids turned super woke and all of that. So yeah, he's a crazy hard worker. And, you know, he cares about the future. He's really interested in the depopulation stuff. He's really interested in birth rates. He's really fascinated by free speech and really, right? So, I mean, Mike, and you just think of the tens or hundreds of thousands of jobs he's created. And people can have families and raise kids and all of that, right? So I, you know, what was it like Scott Adams the other day was saying, like, well, I think Shakespeare is just a con. He's not a great writer. It's just people think he's great because smart people tell them blah, 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 blah. I'm going through Hamlet with my daughter at the moment. I'm like, damn. Damn. The writing is just staggeringly great. Staggeringly great. And so, you know, it's like poetry is garbage, man. It's like, no. Poetry is distilled human essence perfection. It is slivers of the soul cast on your plate for you to enjoy. And it's the essence of our emotions and ideals made real. It's bringing people back to life from thoughts long dead. I mean, it's incredible, right? So, yeah, the best engineers on the planet want to work with him. I didn't think my thoughts through. No, but here's the thing, right? Here's the thing. I tried to find the Mel Gibson Hamlet. I could not find it. I know I watched it some years ago. Maybe I've got it in a DVD somewhere. But yeah, Mel Gibson's is the best Hamlet. We're going through the Kenneth Branagh Hamlet, which I find is a 7 out of 10. Except for Derek Jacobi. Derek Jacobi could read the phone book and I'd be mesmerized. So yeah, just here's the problem, though, is that when you, like, you have to be very careful about what you say. And I'm not trying to make anyone paranoid, but you really have to be careful about what you say. Because if you say, you know, Elon Musk sucks, he's just not come through on this, that, and the other, then you are diminishing the opposition that he's facing. And that's dangerous for people. It's very dangerous for people to, like, so if, like, let me give you an example, right? So let's say you're out there and there's some giant grizzly bear and some guy runs away from the giant grizzly bear. And you tell all of the young bucks and the teenage boys and so on, it's like, oh, I could totally take down that bear. I can't believe that guy's running away. I wouldn't hesitate. Well, what are those kids going to do? They're going to hesitate. They're not going to hesitate. They're going to rush in because you told them it was easy to take down and it was simple and you could do it way better. They're going to rush in to get their heads ripped off. I do not diminish the dangers that people are facing. You're going to get people seriously damaged. Is this clear to everyone? I'm very passionate about this. I'm very passionate about this. Right? People's lives get destroyed by you being cocky about the dangers they face. You need to be more curious rather than jumping to conclusions. Well, let me ask you this. Has Elon Musk earned respect for his intelligence and his perceptiveness? Does he know how to balance risk? You can't be a successful entrepreneur if you don't know how to balance risk. Right? You have to take enough risks to succeed, but not so many that you fail. You have to be really good at balancing risks. Right? Because if you incorrectly balance risk, if you do it really badly, you get sued for fiduciary misconduct by your shareholders. So he's really good at balancing risk. So we can assume that he is doing the maximum that is feasible in the situation. Is that fair to say? Because if he could do more without destroying his platform, he would. Because, like, who wins the race? The guy who drives as fast as possible without crashing. If you drive too fast and you crash, you lose the race. If you don't drive fast enough, you lose the race. So he's driving as fast as he can without crashing the car. I think he's got a proven track record, certainly way better than you or me or, frankly, anyone else listening to this or anyone else currently in the stream. Elon Musk has a track record of balancing risk that is better than anybody else on the planet that I can think of. So then saying, well, he should be doing more. You're talking to the number one race car driver in the world who's won the most races and is the wealthiest, and you're saying he's driving badly. Dude! Have some humility. Don't be that armchair guy, you know? Don't be that guy, oh, I could drive way better than that guy. Well, why the fuck aren't you winning races? If you're so much better at balancing risk than Elon Musk, why aren't you richer and more successful or more prominent or more something than Elon Musk? I'm better at managing risk than the world's most successful entrepreneur. Can I see your bank account? I bet you it ain't got a lot of zeros in it. I know mine doesn't. So, I don't know. I'm sorry to me to laugh, but It's just amazing to me. I mean, you're literally like, can you imagine if I, you know, I work out a little bit, right? But okay, more than a little bit, but I'm not a natural muscle growing kind of guy, right? So can you imagine me, you know, looking at pictures of Arnold Schwarzenegger in his prime and saying, oh, the guy's working out all wrong. I mean, look at my muscles. He's just working out all wrong, man. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, well, I'm sure he wants to get to Mars to leave most of the world behind. I mean, can you imagine what it's like being Elon Musk, being that productive, that brilliant, that entrepreneurial, and having to deal with people of vastly less ability to get things done? I mean, imagine the torture of being Elon Musk in the business world. Imagine the frustration. You know how much frustration he has to manage just to get things built? Because he could do it 100 times better. But he's got to motivate other people and keep them aligned when they have much less ability than he does. So, yeah, I just, please, I'm begging you, give the difficulties he's facing their due. Give the difficulties he's facing their due. Because I guarantee you, he is taking on way more dangerous challenges than you and I are. Way more dangerous challenges than you and I are. So he's not keeping his word. I mean, it's almost like the husband is like literally having a heart attack and she's complaining that he didn't bring her flowers. Do you think Ayn Rand would like him? Yeah, I think so. I think she would. I think she would. I mean, he's as close to John Galt as we're getting, right? Am I wrong about that? He's as close to John Galt as we're getting. I'd do it better. Yeah, it took 150 years to get where we are. The idea that you can just, you know, especially post-Trump, anybody who thinks, well, you just, you know, it's easy to do the right thing. I think my comment maybe is something I learned from my mother. She was always commenting on people she knew little about. Right. So what is the purpose? Like what? And I'm not trying to be critical here. I'm just, you know, let's be frank, right? I mean, I have to watch this in myself as well. Right, so I get, and I'm doing the History of Philosophy series, and I get kind of annoyed at philosophers throughout history who lied and covered up great crimes and immoralities and didn't focus on childhood, and right? So what is the purpose of saying to one of the most brilliant people on the planet, he's doing things badly and I would do things better. I would just do things so much better. He's disappointing me. Yeah, he didn't have to. You know, understand, the guy never has to show up. I mean, the next 20 generations of Elon Musk's progeny could live off his savings, right? I mean, he doesn't have to do any of this. Why is he doing it? Why is he doing it? So what is the purpose of vainglorious boasting about things you know little to nothing about? And I'm just being frank. I'm not being harsh. And look, I'm prey to this as well, so we're all in the same trenches here, right? What is the purpose of vainglorious boasting about things you know virtually nothing about? What is the effect of it? If you want to know what the purpose is, to feel significant, you're not sure? No, it's not to feel special. Nope, because you know it's a lie. Makes a large man small, allows me to feel larger without having to achieve it. No, because you know the truth deep down. Avoiding responsibility, sounding smart. But you know you're not smart. It doesn't help your self-esteem. Excuses for lack of accomplishment, but you know it's a lie. I will tell you why you do it. And when I say this, you will immediately grasp it and you will... Will you donate? If this is really important and changes your life, will you give me a couple of bucks? Come on, let's trade. Let's trade like camel riders in the desert. There is a benefit. Of course there is. It It's right here. I got it right here. It's going to blow your mind. Do you want it? Next month, promise it'll be a 20% interest. All right, that's fair. Hey, that's fine. And listen, if you don't have money, don't worry. Please don't donate if you don't have any money. That's fine. Enjoy the show. Donate later when you make some money. You sub? Oh, that's fair. All right, that's fair. Okay, so the purpose of vainglorious boasting about things you know little to nothing about is to keep quality people away from you. Now, why do you want to keep quality people away from you? The answer is you don't. So who in your life benefits from quality people running in the opposite direction whenever you show up with your vainglorious boasting about things you know little to nothing about? Who benefits from you not having quality people in your life? The shitty people in your life benefit from you not having quality people in your life. So they teach you all this vainglorious boasting about things you know little to nothing about. So you drive away the quality people that expose them for shitty people and free you from their clutches. Ugh. Boom! Tell me that ain't it. Why does your mother do it? Son of a bitch. Literally. That's it. Of course it is. Of course it is. You think you're good at lying to yourself? You're not. You're not good at lying to yourself. You know the truth. You know the truth. It's a repulsion device to keep the quality people out who are going to say, hey, you're surrounded by pretty shitty people. You follow? Whenever something isn't benefiting you, look at who it is benefiting and you'll find the answer. Principle, principle, principle. My nutritionist keeps telling me to eat badly. Well, that's because I assume that you not getting better benefits your nutritionist. My parents are the shitty people, even though they're not in my life. They seem to be in my head. Yeah, of course they are. See, we're not designed to leave shitty people behind. We're not designed for that because for almost all of human history, you couldn't. I don't like this tribe. It seems to be full of really bad people who are very cunning and manipulative and destructive. So what are you going to do? You're going to go join some other tribe? They don't want you, and it's the same damn thing. So we're not designed to evolve from parental commandments because almost all of human history was this unbelievably repetitive Groundhog Day, right? We're not designed for any of that. So of course they're still in your head because they're never designed to leave your head because there was never any choices. You could not, for almost all of human history, you could not ever find and hold on to quality people. Never, ever, 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 ever. Oh, look, I'm a slave, but I'm going to choose quality people. Oh, look, I'm a serf. I'm bought and sold with the land like livestock in a wooden shed, but I'm going to find quality. No, no. Oh, my marriage has been arranged by my elders. Oh, I'll find it. Oh, I can't do that. Oh, I know. I've been drafted into an army. I'll just surround myself. Oh, I can't do that. I've been sold by my family into a religious cult. I'll just find quality. Oh, I can't do that. Oh, I've joined a monastery. I'll just make sure I have quality. No, I can't do that. How about no? Speared. Lo, I hath been slain. Yeah. Yeah. Wait, I disagree with the local tribal chieftain and witch doctor. Wait, I'm attempting to hug wood with nails. We had no chance whatsoever to choose quality people throughout almost all of our history. So when I say choose quality people, I'm basically saying to your mind, it'd be great, you know, just fly. Just, you know, flap your little hands and fly. Defy gravity. I don't know why you do all this walking stuff. That's crazy. Just fly. It's way less congested, way less crowded, and the view's way better. Get the nice breeze in your hair. And air stewardesses will walk by with peanuts. Just, you know, just fly. Choose quality people. I'm saying, why do you need all the scuba gear? Just, you know, draw lines. Draw five lines like a shark. Draw five lines on your neck and use those as gills. The armchair quarterback does repel people. It's like an indirect criticism for the audience. Oh, God. Armchair quarterbacks they're repulsive. Right, and to the listener, I know this is just an echoing habit, it's a minor thing, you're here, so I'm not saying you're repulsive. I'm just saying that the people who are really committed to it, it's repulsive. I mean, how much advice do I get on how to be a better live streamer, podcaster, thinker, writer, philosopher, reasoner, debater, interviewer, public figure, etc. How much advice over the years have I gotten on how to do what I do? So much better. Oh, it's a torrent. You really should do it this way. Well, that you're just alienating people if you do that. Well, don't be so harsh, and you got to be this. Don't do that. Deal with this topic. Don't. The real important thing is this. You're not doing it right. The way you present, it's just off-putting. It's just negative. I mean, you got to be more inclusive. You've got to be warmer. You got to be nicer. You got to be harsher. You got to be more. You're too soft. You're too nice to people. You just enable. You're just such a simp. Whenever you have a call-in show with a girl, you just slobber all over her and agree with everything she says. But you're really harsh with the men. It's totally hypocritical. And you should do this, and you should do that. And you don't take on this topic. Now, listen, don't get me wrong. I take advice. Yeah, you should go back. I know how your life should be run, despite the fact that you have now 18 years as a public, highly controversial, edgelord philosopher, and you're still standing, and you're still doing a show, and you still have an audience, and you still have an income after 18 years. But I've watched a couple of your shows, and I know exactly how it should be done. Now, here's the thing. I'm happy to take advice. I really am. And some people have given me good advice. Some people have given me good advice, for sure. And some people have pointed out hypocrisy that's been very helpful to me and has changed the show. So I'm really happy to take advice. Tell me the number of people in your life that you will take advice from. Doesn't mean automatic, but they have great credibility with you in giving advice. Is the number of people in your life, when they give you advice, you're like, you take it very seriously, and they're likely to be right. Hopefully including yourself. What's that old meme? Would you take $50,000 if it meant giving $100,000 to the person you hated the most? And someone replied, yeah, why wouldn't I want $150,000? Ouch. Ouch. Yeah, I mean, in terms of the people I would really take advice from, maybe five people. So I thought I'm in the median here, right? Maybe five people that I would seriously take advice from. Now, again, if somebody's pointed out an illogical thing that I've said or something, if there's evidence that goes counter to what I've argued, that's totally fine. I'll listen to that, right? But it's funny how people with no credibility insist that I listen to them. And again, that just drives quality people away from them. Why do they feel this compulsion to lecture people with vastly more experience? Like I've seen, oh my God, the things I've seen. I'm not kidding. The things I have peered into the deep, dark, inner gristle of people's lives now thousands of times. People have opened up. They've told me their darkest secrets, their biggest histories. And you guys know, I mean, there's a whole bunch of those conversations I've never published, but so there's lots more that than has even gone out there. So I've had, and it's a really privileged position, I've looked deep into the heart of human history and motivation, probably more so than any other person around, in terms of bringing morals to it as well, right? Because some people will do that in terms of psychology, but they bring empathy, but not usually morality, sometimes, but not usually. So as a philosopher goes, I'm in possession of the greatest treasure in human history, which is an examination of the depths of the human soul over decades. Because I didn't just walk into call-in shows like with nothing. I have been doing this for many years just in my personal life. I've always been curious about what make people tick and asking them about their lives. So I have thousands and thousands of people over the course of my life that have opened up their hearts, minds, histories, and souls, their greatest agonies and greatest challenges and greatest potentiality. And other people will try and tell me about human nature. Like they literally will just, oh, well, what you don't understand about human nature is like, are you crazy? Like, what is the matter with you? It doesn't mean everything I say is right. But I don't know, man. It's just bizarre to me. The people who haven't even had one of these conversations is telling me, who has successfully had thousands. Right, so after I said to people, I don't get much feedback posts, a lot of people have emailed me and said how much the show has helped and how much, I mean, somebody earlier said that the show has helped me enormously. So I've had thousands and thousands of incredibly successful conversations in the heart of human dynamics and right at the depths and roots of their souls. And people will just unironically come up and talk to me about human nature. Well, human nature is this, human nature is that. It's like, dude, there's probably no one alive who's got a greater and deeper moral view of human nature than I have. And I've earned that. And it's not a theory because a lot of them are published. And people will just tell me, right? Human nature is like this. Or people, you know, I've said this before, that people who have like, you know, 50 followers would tell me, at, I don't know, peak of my social media, I had, you know, well over 1.5 million followers on various platforms, probably closer to 2. And people would look legitimately with a dozen or 2 followers would tell me how to manage that. People who hadn't taken any risks would tell me how to manage risk. It's incredible. People who didn't know how to ride a bike would tell me how to drive the fastest car in the universe on the toughest terrain that exists, which I've been doing successfully for decades. And people would literally tell me how to drive a car, the fastest car that exists, moral philosophy, over the toughest terrain, people's resistance. And with no sense of deferral, no sense of irony, no sense of respect. It's wild. Now, don't attack yourself, right? So the person is saying, thank you, this is hard to hear, but I do now see how shitty it was of me to make that comment and his running of Twitter was somehow bad. I don't know anything about that stuff and I feel pretty crap about saying what I did. So, no, here's the thing too now. So this is the 1-2 punch, right? So the 1-2 punch. The 1-2 punch is, first you say this arrogant nonsense about how you do how you do Elon Musk's job so much better, right? And when there's pushback on that, you self-attack. You understand, this is a secondary line of defense to keeping quality people away from you, right? So to go from arrogance to self-attack, both of which are pretty gross for quality people to be around. Have you ever been around somebody who just is punching themselves, oh, I'm so terrible, I can't do anything right, this and that. Do you feel manipulated? Do you feel like you want to spend time with that person? Do you feel like you have any input and you can help that person? Or you're just like, oh, I'll let you punch yourself because I can't intervene, I can't stop you. Right? So you understand, this is the second line of defense to keep quality people away from you. The first line is arrogance, the second line is self-attack. Well, if you're not turned off by the arrogance or you confront me with the arrogance, I'll just start punching myself. And then do you want to hang around with me watching me punch myself? I'm just such a terrible person. Do quality people want to be around that? You understand? Your mom's still winning. She's just fallen back to the second line of defense. Well, of course you self-attack. That's the flip side of arrogance. Because you say, well, I got to attack someone, so I'm going to attack Elon Musk. And if that's pushed back, then you attack yourself. So arrogance and self-attack are just two sides of the same coin. Now, why do you have the paradigm that someone's got to be attacked? And if I push back on you attacking Elon Musk, then you'll attack yourself. Why does anybody have to be attacked, right? That's the big question. Why does anybody have to be attacked? Why does anybody have to be attacked? Why does anybody have to be attacked? Now, the real way to ask that question is, who does it serve that you're hostile, either to Elon Musk or to yourself? Who does it serve that you're hostile? That's the fundamental question. Because I'm covering something up inside. Oh my God, people, I don't mean to sound impatient, but we just went through this. You got to internalize this shit. You got to. Who does it serve if you're needlessly hostile to others or to yourself? Doesn't serve you, does it? Needless hostility doesn't get quality people in your life, drives quality people away, and only invites people who either like to be insulted or want to insult you. Who does it serve if you're mindlessly hostile? The bad people in your life want you to be mindlessly hostile. Why do they want you to be mindlessly hostile? Why do the bad people in your life want you to be mindlessly hostile? Why? 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 No, not sabotage. Yes, to keep away better people, but it's more fundamental than that. So they are the best option. That's true, but that's a consequence. To hide their abuse, that's a consequence. No. No. Oh, I'm telling you guys, this is going to hurt. Oh, this is going to hurt. This is like punching around the rotating rings on the old vector game Star Castle. Oh, it's going to hurt. Oh, it's going to hurt. I mean, it hurts me and I'm past it. It serves to help those who are hostile to you to protect themselves from consequences of righteous judgment. Nope. Nope, nope, nope. Oh, boy. Hit me with why if you're ready to swallow some pain. It'll help, but it's. I just need to know. Where's everyone at? All right. All right. You want it. You want it. You want to swallow this jagged little pill? Okay. The reason that your abusers implant in you mindless hostility is so you don't get any allies at all. You never get boon companions. You never get allies. You never get people who will help you. You are forever isolated and nobody is on your side. Nobody will empathize with you. Nobody will take your side against them. Nobody will have sympathy for you. Nobody will be your close friend and boon companion. You will forever be facing these demons entirely isolated, alone, spurned, rejected, ostracized, exiled, solitary. Does that land on the bullseye? That hits so hard it hurts. Absolutely. Mindless hostility means you never get an ally. Rings true here. Accurate. Nobody ever stands up for you if you're arrogant or self-attacking. I feel like a baby seal. Wreck your credibility. Well, what does it take for someone to be your ally? What does it take for someone to be your ally? What is needed? Virtue, you have to provide some value. Vulnerability, no. No. Trust, yes, but what does trust rely? What does trust require? What does it require? What does it need? What does it mean to trust someone? Not credibility. That's an effect. Honesty? No, he was honestly telling me about his self-attack. To be reliable? Yeah. That's right. Consistency. Okay, let me ask you this. Have you ever shown up for these from one of these live streams and say, oh, I didn't learn anything new from that. Pfft, he's just rehashing all the old topics. Yeah, there's nothing new here. Has that ever happened? Never. And I've been doing this for close on 20 years. New, new, new. Why? That's why you come, right? So you come because there's new. Some people, like smart people want new things and less intelligent people want repetition, right? So there's always something new. So you need consistency, reliability, right? In order to ally with someone, they need to be reliable. They need to be consistent. They need to be stable to some degree or another, right? Now, if you have arrogance followed by self-attack, in other words, you're the greatest thing ever and then you're worthless, Are you consistent and reliable and stable? No. Quite the opposite. You're manic, depressive. I'm the greatest thing ever. I'm the worst person who ever lived. Nobody can ally with you because you're not reliable. Ally, rely, ally, rely, ally, rely. It blows my mind how you still have things to blow my mind. It will go on for the next 30 years. I don't know. Philosophy is just speaking through me. What can I tell you? So when you go from arrogance to self-attack, you are signaling to people that they cannot be your ally. Why? Because the person I allied with was punishing me for allying with him. We're not even at the bottom yet. We're not even at the bottom yet. But hit me with a why if you want me to keep going. All right, so he comes all hot about Elon Musk is incompetent, right? Elon Musk is incompetent. And I break that down. I'm allying with him. And I'm pointing out that this is harmful to him. It's arrogant. It's going to drive good people away. So I'm his ally, right? Do we agree with that? Hit me with an A, because we just had a bunch of Y's. Hit me with an A if you understand that I was being his ally in pushing back against his arrogance regarding Elon Musk. I'm allying with him, right? I'm his ally for his better self, his higher self, because I want him to have quality people in his life. So I'm allying with him. I'm setting up an alliance with him, right? And then what happens when I ally with him? What happens then? You self-attacked and made that harder. Exactly. And I'm not criticizing. I'm just pointing out the continuity, right? You punished me for allying with you. Ugh, now I just hate myself. So we're waging a war. You either shoot into the air hitting nothing or you shoot yourself in the foot. Either way, I'm not being helped. I'm like, don't shoot in the sky. Oh, I just shot myself in the foot. Are you happy now? Ah! You know we have some actual enemies, right? So I got punished for being his ally. And tell me this doesn't ring true. We've all done it. I've done it. You've done it. Everyone's done it. Everyone's done it. We've all punished people for taking our side. Or rather, the jerks in our life have set that tripwire up. I remember I said it was the second line of defense. This is a crazy good perspective. Yes, I know. I know. I give myself goosebumps on a regular basis. Learned response. It's an inflicted isolation. Oh, are you actually trying to help me? Fuck you, I'll just stop punching myself. And so that's gross enough that you're going to stop trying to help me. You punish your allies with self-attack. Right? You punish your allies with self-attack. Or rather, the crappy people in your life have programmed you to drive good people away who are trying to ally with you. So how many times have I really worked hard to help someone, particularly in sort of text format or in this kind of format? How many times have I really tried to help someone? And by allying myself with their long-term interests, I get punished by the internalized abusers in their life in order that they do not gain any allies and remain isolated. So when I would say to women online, you're mostly infertile at 40, you're going to live to 80. What happened? I'm allying with their interests. I'm trying to ally with their best interests. I'm trying to rescue them from bad decisions. I'm allying with them. And what did they do? So many of the women and some of the men, what do they do when I'm allying with their actual self-interest? What do they do? Viciously attack, of course. Now, why are they viciously attacking? It's not even about morals. Why did the women viciously attack me online consistently? And they're doing it now to H. Pearl Davis, and they're doing it to Rachel, whatever her name is, a bunch of them. Like, they do it. So why is it that women would attack me for trying to ally with their own long-term self-interest? Why? No, they're not programmed to kill their own gene set. That's not a thing. It's the anima. Jungian doesn't explain much. Okay, who runs the culture? K-selected, commitment-prone people, or R-selected sex addicts? Who runs the culture? Yeah, it's R-selected, right? So R-selected, short-term, hedonistic sex addicts run the culture as a whole, right? So now, if I say to women, become mothers, that is changing who they want to have sex with. Do you follow? I'm trying to get in there, change the levers, so they stop looking for hotness and short-term wealth and status, and they start looking for morals and quality, provide and protect guys, right? Now, what happens to an addict when you interfere with his supply? What do the addicts do? Yeah, they attack. Do you know what the phrase that is used to describe an addict's rage at any interference with the supply? Right? What is the phrase used? It's emotional terrorism. They're emotional terrorists. Right? So the sex addicts want access to women, and the way that they maintain that access to women, how do low-quality men maintain their access to women? They become antinatalists. They program women to reject children. Because if women want children, they won't want the low-quality men. So low-quality men program women to reject babies so that they continue, the low-quality men can continue to have access to the females. I mean, have you ever met a writer? Have you ever met a writer? Do you think these are high-quality men? Capable of deep empathy, commitment, and... Do you think that the average writer can protect his family in a fight? Have you met these people? They get carpal tunnel syndrome if their keyboard is spaced the wrong way. Have you seen the people who run the culture? They look like either O's or apostrophes. Weak men will train women out of wanting babies so that women aren't drawn to strong men. Why is there a movement away from empiricism and towards subjectivism and relativism? Because low-quality males are better at manipulating words than reality. Manipulating words rather than reality is a bit more of a feminine thing. And when you train women to reject being mothers, you train women to value feminized men. Because when women are vulnerable through pregnancy and labor and having babies around, they need a strong male protector. So the weak betas need to program women to reject children so that women become more masculine so that they prefer more feminized men. So the person who self-attacked said, so when I say I'm just shit at X, I'm self-attacking because my parents don't want me to succeed and have allies. In some ways, I addict myself to self-attack to make sure I don't get allies, so I keep my parents happy. Am I close? What do you mean you addict yourself? What the fuck are you talking about? You addict. You see, this is just another form of self-attack. All right? Let me ask you this. I mean, this is an important question, right? And this is something you can remember every time this comes up so that you don't pull this bullshit on yourself. Right. Okay. Hit me with a why if, as a baby, you taught yourself English. Or whatever language you spoke as a baby. Did you teach yourself? Did you start with a blank slate and say, oh, well, what do you think the most productive language would be? I don't know. Go to the library. I'm going to waddle up in my diapers and I'm going to ask for this, that, or the other, right? The fuck, you didn't teach yourself. I didn't teach myself English. It was taught to me. It was in the environment, right? So your self-attack is a language, right? Your relationship with yourself is language. And language is taught because all self-attack is based on language. It's a judgment, and judgment is based on language, because if it's not based on language, it's instinct. And nobody has an instinct to self-attack. Nobody. Can you imagine evolving with an instinct to just attack yourself? Can you imagine a lion waking up and saying, I'm kind of hungry. I think I'll just gnaw the end of my fucking paw off. So you need language to be manipulated into self-attack. So whenever you think of negative habits with yourself, think language. That's all it is. And you even said this. So when I say I'm just shit at X, I say, so if you're taught a critical relationship with yourself, a hostile, angry, bitter, negative, destructive relationship with yourself, it's language. So when you say I addict myself to self-attack, you're saying I taught myself language that was destructive for me. Right? I mean, there's this old Monty Python skit about some Hungarian to English dictionary where the Hungarian would sound out the English phrase, and the phrase was, in Hungarian, it was printed, which way to Euston Station? And then when he sounded it out in Hungarian so that you could ask someone in English, says, please fündel my buttocks. Right? And that's, you know, funny, right? That's funny. Because the guy is just doing what he's told. He's with good faith, accepting what he's told. If you haven't donated for a while, you know how good this shit is, right? Come on. Even if you're listening to this later, this is also for people who are listening later. freedomain.com/donate. I'm shredding my voice for this. So I addict myself to self-attack to make sure I don't get allied so I keep my parents happy. Low-quality people need to keep high-quality people away. Because if high-quality people come around, low-quality people don't do well. Right? So low-quality people need to keep high-quality people away. Now, it is in your parents' best interest that you don't have high quality people in your life. So they train you to be arrogant. And then if somebody allies with you against that arrogance, then their fallback position, the secondary line of defense against quality people, is for you to self-attack. And you did this because if you didn't, you'd be dead. I addict myself to self-attack. No, what are you addicted to? Breathing, living, passing on your genes. So if you hadn't done that, if you hadn't agreed with your parents and set up all of these defenses to keep high-quality people away, what would have happened? Evolutionarily speaking, what happened to children who really opposed their parents? What happened? What happened to them? Just out of curiosity. Yeah. They weren't protected. They weren't provided for. They didn't make it. They didn't make it. I mean, you understand, do you understand how precarious childhood was for almost all of human history? You know exactly how. I mean, half of children didn't even make it to their fifth birthday, even when the parents weren't killing their children. And as I talked about in my speeches in Australia, significant proportions of Aboriginal children were murdered. Yeah, they're fed last, they're saved last, and so on, right? And even if you struggle and you make it through to adulthood, Attacking your parents means attacking your mother. Attacking your mother means attacking all the other women who are raised by other women who are exactly like your mother, right? So those women will reject you and your genes will die out anyway. Your parents are just shortening the journey to genetic death. It's my mom that taught me this. Okay. Why do most parents teach their children language? Yeah, Rome had marble pits they could leave the unwanted kids on. That's right. So why do most parents teach their children language? Well, there's conformity and so on. They teach their language for two reasons. Number one, so they can order their children around. And number two, so their children will be productive, so the children can provide for their parents in their old age. So remember, most parents, when they get older, if they don't have the support of their children, they die ugly, painful deaths. So if you are a low-quality parent and you allow your children to have high-quality people around, those high-quality people are going to take your children away. They're going to take them up out of the pit of despair and doom and the underworld of crap and shit and all of that that's in these trashy classes. So they're going to skyhook your kids out. Right? I mean, I'm not talking theory here. How many resources do my parents get after I found and went with quality people? How many resources do my parents get after I found and went with quality people? Or any of my family of origin, for that matter. My father's dead. My mother's still alive. They get nothing. Right? So you understand, you are a crop. You are a crop to be planted and harvested. Now, how do farmers feel about birds that eat all of their crops, or rabbits, or how do you feel if your life depends on your chickens and there's a bunch of wolves and coyotes about? You shoot them, you trap them, they're enemies, they'll get you killed. So you build fences around your chickens the same way your parents bake defenses into your psychology. Because quality people will take the resource that they need for their old age that they've invested into. They can't make it through the winter of the last quarter of their life without you. Now, they can't become higher quality people, probably. So all they do is they set up these fences around you to make sure the predators of high quality don't steal you from their livestock farm. If you had crappy people around you when you were younger, they smell the scent of the quality people. And they mark you as their territory. They mock you as their tissue. We own him. We own him. He's arrogant. When you ally against that arrogance, he'll fall to self-attack. We own him. He's branded. He's one of us. We get to keep him. You don't take him from us. We own him. We rely upon him. We need him. We can't become better. He's got to stay bad. Yes, that's right, Sammy. That is right. But we're not at the bottom. Should we go to the bottom? Is it worth it? All right, let me just grab a drink. It's unfair to my voice to keep it dry. Your ears haven't popped yet? Oh, shoot, what was my point? Whoops. If you get off the ride, sometimes the roller coaster just goes away and you watch it while falling into the lake. It will come back, I'm sure. I had that. I did something at a podcast this morning, and I was just crops, yeah. It will return at its right and proper time. You answer so many questions of why my parents did not do X. Thank you, Stéphane Molyneux. You're very welcome, my friend. You're very welcome. They own you, marked territory, that's true. We'll get there. My brain's probably just taking a slight break so we can not get the bends. Yeah, they smell quality people. They want to keep those quality people away. Yes! That's it. That's it. All right. So, some people get out, right? This is the bottom. And we're talking about this with regards to the French Revolution and sin. Some people get out. Right? If you came from a really bad, trashy, crappy, low-rent situation, did you get out? I mean, not 100%, whatever that means, but are you mostly out? Hit me with a Y if you're mostly out. Yeah. Fantastic. Good. That's, you know, that's the evolution that normally takes 1,000 generations. And you did it in one. Thank you. Thanks to you. I appreciate that. Thank you. I mean, you did it. I mean, I did the recipe. You did the diet, right? So, now, do you go back to rescue those left behind? Are you tempted to? Do you want to go back and rescue those left behind? This is not a good or bad or right or wrong. I'm just curious. You can't, but it is tempting. I've tried. It's almost impossible. Easier to rescue young people. You want to, for sure. Yes. Struggling with this with my niece and nephew. Yeah. Tempted to. Yes. You've tried. Those that are also trying to change their life too. Yes. At the risk of your own life. Yeah, you're not kidding about that. You're not kidding about that. You know, farmers can shoot people who destroy their crops because it's them or us, right? Not where I wish to be, but I want to find a way to start my own business, right? Still trying, still in conversation. Only help someone as much as they're willing to work for themselves. Right. My parents tried to rescue my cousins by bringing them into our house, almost destroyed our family, in my opinion. Yeah. It seems like you can only lead by example. I mean, I got out before I started this show. I was out of that environment, right? How helpful has it been to you that I came back for you? That I didn't leave you there? That I found a way out and I came back for you? I think it made all the difference. I hope it made all the difference. I got out of abusive relationships. I came back for you, which put me back into abusive relationships. Right? You follow how that works, right? If you look at what's said about me, that's all verbal abuse, right? And threats and violence and all of that, right? So I was repulsed by manipulations, threats, violence and abuse in my environment. I got out. I came back. I came back. Now, why did I come back? I could have moved on. I could have just had my comfortable, happy, peaceful existence. Why did I come back? You wonder what's making you tear up right now? No, you don't. Why did I come back? Why did I put myself back in the situation of being terrorized and abused? Why did I come back? Hope? No. You got to be a female to think that hope is a male emotion. It's helped me a lot, especially in my marriage. You wanted to help innocent children and victims. The future? Yeah, that's all very true. Why did I come back for you? I was finished. I was done with it all. Increase the number of virtuous people in the world, self-interest. Yeah, that's true. That's true, but it's not the primary thing. You want your child to have healthy peers? No, I came back before I was father. Philosophy. I found you in 21. Philosophy is the hardest thing I've ever experienced, but thank you. Appreciate that. Make the world a better place for your daughter? Mm-mm. All right, it's certainly part of it. I had choice. Of course I had choice. Yeah, I had choice. You say I had no choice. I had choice. This is also going to sting a little, but it's going to be better. It's not going to be pain. It's going to be sorrow. Why did I come back? Why did I come back for you? Because, my friends, I so deeply and powerfully remember what it's like to be left behind. To be left behind. Everybody gets out the well and leaves you at the bottom. I very deeply, almost against my will, so vividly remember what it feels like to be left behind. My father left me behind. He escaped to the other side of the world to get away from my mother, left me behind. My brother escaped to England for years and left me behind. I was friends with some very nice middle-class children who left me behind. They had their good lives. They didn't want to hear about anything to do with mine. Because I so vividly remember. I remember my brother when I was very little, like a couple of years old, maybe three. I was literally wandering around my neighborhood. My brother had gone downtown with our babysitter. I don't know where my mom was. Half the time I never knew where my mother was in my early memories. My brother had gone downtown London with his babysitter, and I'd just been left to wander the neighborhood at the age of, honestly, three. Like, I remember, because I remember being way shorter than various items that I know the height of. And initially I didn't want to go, and then I felt really bad for being left behind. I felt left behind. I shouldn't have been left behind, of course, right? Through ability, intelligence, luck, circumstance, the magic X of free will, I found a way out. I found a way out. One of the most dangerous things to do in society is to not go back for those still trapped. Right? You know that, right? Like, I mean, if you're getting out of a burning building and someone you love is still in there, don't you go back? Your children are still in there, don't you go back? I would have adopted little Steph. I appreciate that. I can't thank you enough for coming back for me. If you develop a cure and the only way to cure others is to get sick again or to be attacked again, I mean, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Yeah, and you go back. You go back. Also, if you don't go back, all those left behind become virulent. They tear down society. And I'm not even going to disagree with them that much. A society that doesn't turn back to help those left behind. A society that doesn't turn back to help those left behind. Does it have that much to complain about when those left behind burn society to the ground, so to speak? I mean, there is a certain amount of obviously self-protection and all of that, but oh, yeah, man, I know what it's like to be left behind. I know what it's like to have to struggle in isolation without allies, without truth, without a path forward, having to will everything, having to just put one foot in front of each other like some plodding death march animal. I remember what it's like to just have to coast your way through the day with your head filled with dissociative helium because you can't connect with anyone or anything, to have your emotions like some forest fire 10,000 feet below your dissociated airplane. I mean, I know what it's like to be so distant from your body that you're like a hot air balloon on the moon. To be so angry that you have to tear out the roots of your anger and scatter them to the four winds for fear of doing something irreversible. I know what that's all like. I know what it's like to look around your entire social environment and feel little other than contempt and exhaustion. I know what it's like to be trapped in the decaying orbit of people's defenses where they'll never change and you'll never give up trying to change them and you just wear yourself to nothing. Like an obsessive kid writing with chalk on a driveway until the chalk disintegrates into nothing, the rain comes and you just end up with a multicolored bullshit puddle at the bottom. I know what it's like to get up with unbelievable weariness to look at the day filled with the same bullshit from the same people who never change and never think. Only defend, only attack. Stimulus, response, cause and effect, dominoes and nothing. This is hurting. This is the fellow who I allied with. When I was a kid, my parents would go on tour for weeks or months and leave me with live-in babysitters. Almost right up until I was 13. I got left a lot. Maybe some of my original comments come from that. Yeah. Somebody says, I remember. You and maybe two people I knew in real life reached out to help me when I almost died and was at my lowest. I worked so hard to get out of that place. Part of it is I never want to go back there again. Right. But you may, at some point, develop the strength to go back and help people like yourself. It's not a requirement. It's not an absolute. But it's something I felt I had to do. And I'm not, you know, trying to pump myself up morally. I'm just saying that it was so vivid to remember the agony and isolation and despair and hatred and anger of being left behind that when I saw people who were being left behind, it's almost involuntary. Like when you, I hate to say like it's no free will, but when you have that level of empathy, it's almost impossible to not help, right? Is teaching virtue the only way to help? Is that what I'm doing right now? Am I teaching virtue? Am I teaching virtue? I don't think I am. What am I doing? What am I doing now in this conversation? Teaching virtue? I don't think so. I haven't talked about the non-aggression principle or honesty or integrity or anything like that. Someone writes, next year makes 10 years since I found freedom in and took my first steps to where I am now. So easy to be prey to despair / rage. But now I'm turning towards the light, to turn dreams into a plan of action. I would be the entrepreneur who can offer jobs and a hand up to others, as they did for me. I have deep empathy but lack the means. Now I can change that. Beautiful. Like St. Patrick, who escaped slavery in Ireland, but then went back, and by the time he was done, had practically eradicated slavery there. Right. Right. He escaped slavery, and he returned to slavery, the slavery of being attacked. What am I doing at the moment? Am I teaching virtue? What am I doing? I don't think I'm teaching virtue. This is not an abstract argument that I'm making. Yeah, I'm allying. I'm your ally. I'm also, I think, teaching you that there's strength in vulnerability. You know, my daughter was saying the other day that there was someone who said something kind of rude to her and hasn't apologized. And she said, this person, if this person apologized, this person would go up in my estimation so much it would be crazy. And I said, yeah, so apologies come from a place of strength, right? To apologize is to be strong. To be vulnerable is to be strong. I would say that I'm being fairly vulnerable. I mean, I'm sort of opening my heart and my history and all that happened and what motivates me. I mean, I would say that feels fairly vulnerable, right? Now, do you view this vulnerability as weak or pathetic or low status or anything like that? I don't think so. I don't feel weak. I feel that this is just, isn't this just directness and honesty, right? Because when you're vulnerable, you're saying, I can, when you're being vulnerable, you're saying that if you reject my vulnerability, that's fine, right? I mean, if somebody were to, oh, look at him crying online about his childhood 50 years past or whatever, what a pathetic, like, that wouldn't really hurt me. Because I know that the honesty is really important for me. I know the honesty is really important to the world. And I can't preach a value or virtue called honesty and then not speak openly and truthfully about my thoughts and feelings when I'm asked or when it's appropriate, when it's important, right? So vulnerability comes from a place of strength. So when people say, as this guy did, oh, Elon Musk should do X, Y, and Z, that's not vulnerable. That's arrogant. And arrogance comes from a place of weakness. Because arrogance is an inability to handle criticism. And because you can't criticize yourself, because you, all you do is self-attack, that's what you're programmed to do, you then have to, you know, this gun's got to go off, I got to point it either at someone else or myself, right? You would know it's coming from a weak person if they attacked you, right? Right. So curiosity comes from strength, because curiosity is vulnerable. I don't have the answers. I don't have the answers is vulnerable. Curiosity is, but I can get the answers, right? I can understand things. I can figure things out. And vulnerability is a great way to weed out the assholes from your life, right? Because if you're vulnerable and people mock or attack you, thank you. Isn't that wonderful? I mean, what a wonderful way to self-identify who should be yeeted out the exit vent, right? Who should be voted off the island? Vulnerability is great. If vulnerability brings curiosity and a cross-pollination of honesty, openness, and vulnerability, that's a wonderful thing. If you're vulnerable and people make fun of you, fantastic. You know, like those people who are like, you know, it's fine to have jokes at your expense, that's fine. But the people who gets kind of pathological and mean, it's like, yeah, fantastic, right? Fantastic. Yeah, science is curiosity, right? Science is, you know, in its ideal, it's a strength, right? Because it's saying, I don't know the answer to this, but we can figure it out, right? We can figure it out. So there's honesty, I don't know the answer, and there's confidence that I can figure it out. So curiosity is great. If I watch a movie in Japanese, I don't speak Japanese, I'm not curious about what they say because I can't, right, figure it out. When someone shows you vulnerability and opens up, one should take it as a compliment, right? So vulnerability brings allies, which is why abusive parents will always teach you to avoid vulnerability. So their continual attacks upon you is to hammer this shield of armor around you so you can't be vulnerable, so you can't get allies. Because if you're weak but not vulnerable, you're unstable, right? If you know that you're physically weak and then you start exercising consistently, you can become stronger. But if you're weak and you think that you're strong, then you're just going to make weird mistakes all the time. You're going to try and lift things too heavy. You're going to pull yourself muscle. They call them weekend warriors here in Canada, right? They call them weekend warriors, like the guys who haven't played hockey in 20 years but think they can just go out and do it, right? Should men be vulnerable to women? Should men be honest with women? A woman who mocks a man for his vulnerability will destroy him. Because a woman wants a man to achieve, and for a man to achieve, he has to take risks. To take risks is to be vulnerable. That's one of the definitions. So a woman who mocks a man for his vulnerability is mocking him for taking risks. And if she's mocking him for taking risks, it's because the trashy people, like leaving your social circle, getting out of the trashy circles, that's all taking risks because you might be alone. You might end up completely isolated. So a woman who mocks a man's vulnerability is mocking his capacity to process risk, and therefore she's chaining him down into the dungeons, right? Thanks for the great show. Whenever you switch subjects or take a pause where I can I message or email you for a call-in show? Yeah, email, yeah, callin@freedomain.com, callin, callin@freedomain.com. All right, I should probably stop here because I've got another big show tonight, and I've got some work to do this afternoon. It's a busy, 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 busy day. And I might do something with the backdrop here. Is there a particular topic tonight? You'll have to tune in to see. But yeah, I think I might I might fuss around with the background a little bit here. It's a little dull. I am in the ether void of charcoal nothingness. All right. Freedomain.com/donate. If you would really like to help out the show, I would massively, massively appreciate it. And I'll hopefully see you tonight. There won't be a show on Sunday, I'm afraid. I have to skip Sunday. Maybe I'll be able to do it later in the day, but I will get back to that. Freedomain.com/donate if you're listening to this later. Lots of love, everyone. Thank you so much for a great, great conversation. I really, really appreciate it. And lots of love. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.